So last week, as I said, we talked about the doldrums. We're really talking about the human stamina limitation. The doldrums refers to a band of winds around the equator, or lack of wind, we might say, that really is just dead calm, creates dead calm in the ocean. Back in the days before there were engine-driven ships and sailing was the option, or the only option there, you can see how the lack of wind would be a problem. So their idea there was not only the boats were stuck, but also the sailors were stuck. And so the doldrums applies to that region of the equator band, but it also applies to the psychological well-being of those sailors who were there. So we can get stuck spiritually, and that doesn't mean that we're giving up or that we're being delinquent or that we're being lazy. It has nothing to do with it. Those are other issues. It just means that your spiritual stamina is not able to sustain itself for a long period of time. This is not a sinful condition in itself. It can turn into one, however, which I warned you in last week's lesson. The doldrums are similar to what's known as writer's block. Sometimes you need to recreate or re-stimulate your creative process. In this case, your creative spiritual process, as I said. We need to recognize God as the source of strength and also spiritual energy and endurance. Even though we're the ones running the race, we need help from God to be sustained for that race. At the same time, we don't just sit around waiting for God to, you know, drop strength down from heaven on us. There are things that we need to do in order to pursue that strength and to do what is in our power and ability and responsibility to take care of. Unfortunately, this is not always easy. I will say, even though this lesson does offer some suggestions, there is no universal solution. Sometimes there is a hit and miss approach to this because people and circumstances are different. And by the way, we are all wired differently. I don't know if you've noticed that, but we all have different temperaments, right? That makes it tough. If we all had the same temperament, maybe we could all know all that we're thinking and how we act and everything else, and all would be cheery and glorious, but it's not, okay? It's not that way. So we struggle. We struggle with ourselves, our own temperaments, and we struggle with each other. We struggle with what God has called us to do. So this lesson is not a cure-all, one-size-fits-all remedy. It's simply meant to get you thinking differently. That's really all this lesson is about, is to stimulate your thinking process. I do want to start out by saying, now that my preamble is done, just because you're in the doldrums, in that state of mind where you feel like you're spinning your wheels, you're stuck in first gear on I-5, right? All those things we talked about last week. It doesn't mean that you're useless to God until you get out. That's an important thing to say. You can be effective to God even in that condition. Because what it's forcing you to do, hopefully, is to turn to God, perhaps in a way that you haven't turned to Him before. And that is useful to God. It's also useful to yourself. Only when you choose to stay in that situation or don't attempt to get out do you render yourself unfit for God's use. I will say that some people confuse doldrums with sheer boredom. If you're not actively pursuing those three key things, prayer, study, fellowship, then you probably will get bored. You'll get bored with church. You'll get bored with people in the church. You'll get bored with the work of the church. You'll get bored with God because you're not pursuing the right mindset there. People do get bored, but not because of the doldrums. That's just plain disinterest or laziness. Remember, we talked a couple of weeks ago, if you have no value of something, then you have no desire for it, and therefore no motivation. So it's important to distinguish between the two things. Those who continue to pray and study and fellowship, even when they're stuck, they will find a way out of the doldrums. Overall, this lesson advocates trust in God to lead you out. This creates dependency and closeness on God. It exercises your faith and draws near to Him. God does not always give us easy or obvious or immediate answers. Maybe that's frustrating to you. It has been frustrating to me before, too. that we want God to just magically provide answers in Scripture. You know, there's a passage you never read before, no one's ever seen in the history of mankind before, but there it is, and it tells you exactly everything you need to know. Wouldn't that be nice? And that's just not exactly how it works whatsoever. So there's great value in searching. And when you're searching for answers, now you're looking intently in the Word and not just reading over it because you have to. And it also involves trusting in Him because you believe that God does have answers and you don't. At least you don't yet, okay? And it has to do with waiting on God, which in Scripture often means hoping in God because He is your deliverer. It's not like God is busy doing other things. He'll get around to getting to you when He's taking care of the other 7 billion people on the planet. That's not how it is at all. It's rather, He needs you to wait and hope in Him so that you'll trust Him more. Sometimes we benefit just from hearing an explanation of the problem and then the design of the solution, and that's where this lesson is right here. I want you to, first of all, recognize that your frustration with your own doldrum situation, if indeed you have it, can lead you to taking that out on someone else. And particularly, this always seems to happen, the someone that is closest to you in your life. Sadly, that just seems to be human nature, that we take out our frustrations on the people that we care about the most or that care about us the most. And without defining or recognizing the foe, we might lash out at a friend instead. And that friend might be a spouse, might be a child, another Christian. Sadly, sometimes it's even God Himself. So if we're going through the doldrums, it's careful to identify that this is what's happening to me rather than to think this is what this person is doing to me that happens to be in my sphere of influence, okay? So there's something happening to me that is not this other person's fault. It's happening to me, but it's not their fault. So I don't lash out at them because it's not their fault. I'm frustrated with what I'm going through. If you're in the doldrums, you might be saying this to yourself, but it's not as if I need to try to find someone to blame for this. It's just a part of your human weakness that we talked about last week. Remember that Satan's attack, I've done whole sermons on this before, Satan's schemes, right? One of Satan's biggest and boldest and unfortunately most successful attacks is to divide and conquer, to keep us weak and unfocused on God and distracted from our spiritual responsibilities. Satan wants to divide friendships. He wants to divide marriages. He wants to divide families. He wants to divide congregations. And if he could, and I think he's done it in some respect, he'll divide the entire brotherhood if possible. So think about that. Satan's angle here, his agenda is not to get us to stay together in peace and work things out. His agenda is to divide us so that we are now, instead of two being strong, like Ecclesiastes says, right? The two lying down together to keep warm type thing. Instead of that, we are now easier targets, more vulnerable, being separate. And again, that happens across the board, from individual people to entire groups of people. So that's what Satan's trying to do. Will he use your doldrums to do that? Well, it's possible. That's why I said it's not a sin to be in the doldrums, but it can be when you give into it, when you succumb to that. It's really important to see that. Satan is very good at what he does, sadly, but we should not be gullible. Like Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11, we should not be ignorant of his schemes. We know what he's doing. So let's not be gullible and naive about that. Let's understand what's happening there, what he is doing to us in the process of us going through our doldrum scenario. The doldrums isn't necessarily anyone's fault. It's part of that natural human cyclic aspect of our human condition. And we just want to make sure that we're not taking that out on someone else. One such relationship, as I mentioned, that we might take it out on is our relationship with God. We may be deliberately choosing rebellion that is born out of our frustration, our fatigue, and even our distrust of God. We want to be very careful not to do that. I want you to consider a threefold strategy. It's pretty simple and maybe oversimplified to some extent, okay, but at least it gets you to thinking in that direction. Recharge and refocus and redirect. Not one of these, but all three of them. These are easy to talk about, and they can be very challenging to put into action, all right, in all fairness. So I can get up here and say, hey, this is what you should do, and my job's over. But you're the one that has to actually do them, and your job's just begun if you're in the doldrums, and that's going to be tough. But you can do this. It is all doable. So first of all, we think about recharging. Well, if your battery is drained, you need to recharge the battery. If your gas tank is low, you can't just keep driving indefinitely thinking that it won't bother you, okay? You have to fill the gas tank. If your blood sugar is low, my family tells me, then you need to eat food. Otherwise, you get into that hangry thing, right? The hungry, angry thing. And I know that never happens to me. My family says it does. I don't know. But you think about, for example, in Scripture, in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 4 through 8, we have Elijah the prophet who is completely depleted, physically, emotionally, spiritually depleted. And he's requesting God to take his life. He is talking about at a low point here. I mean, he's telling God, just take my life. I'm done. I've done all I can do. Everyone's out to get me. I can't do anything else. I mean, they're killing your prophets. They're after me too. And instead, what God does is he provides food on two separate occasions, and he tells Elijah, he says, arise and eat, for the journey is great that I have you on. And he goes on for 40 days on the strength of that food that God provides. Now, keep in mind, too, that God is the one providing the food, but Elijah is the one who has to eat it. And that has to do with you and me, too, that God will provide ways, and he will make provisions, and he will give you ways of escape, but you're the one who has to take opportunity when it's handed to you. God's not going to stuff food down your throat. He's not going to push you through doors, right? He's not going to do those things, but he will make the provision. Just as the physical body needs water and nourishment and rest to recharge, so the soul needs those same sort of things, and it may take time to do that. And with the doldrums, there is a danger to wait it out without doing anything. You need to start searching for solutions. At least that is my strong recommendation in recharging, is start looking for solutions here. I know the example I'm using here is not perfect because it's not a perfect case in point because I'm going to be talking about Peter and his denial of Christ. And we're going to be looking at Luke 22, verse 31 here in just a minute if you want to turn there. But it does talk about Peter hitting a low point. I believe that what Peter's problem here is not just a doldrum situation. It's a result of his sin in denying his Lord. So it's not apples to apples. However, he does go through this doldrum-like mindset, this fallen and depressed mindset. And we do see what it takes to get him out of that. First of all, the setup. Luke 22, verse 31, in the upper room there, Jesus talking with Peter, at least at this point. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and you, once you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. And of course, Peter comes back and denies everything. Lord, with you, I'm ready to go both to prison and to death. And Jesus says, uh-huh. And I wonder how many times Jesus has heard that from us. I'm ready to go to the ends of the earth for you, right? And then Monday comes and we fail. And when we just lose all our steam. I'm speaking from experience, okay? I know what this is like. You know, on Sunday to be all on fire and, you know, filled with the Spirit and, you know, just a burning flame for the Lord. And then Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday comes and I just feel like a little candle, right, in a great darkness. And it's really a frustrating thing to go through. Peter's going to hit bottom very hard, and he will need to be recharged. And that's really meant in two ways in this particular case. Recharged as filled with energy, or refilled with energy, but also recommissioned by Jesus Christ. Okay, recharged in that sense as well. The point we're making here is that you and I are not endless wells of energy, or optimism, or strength, or stamina. We need to be recharged. And part of that recharging weekly is what we're doing right now. This is so important to recharge us. our coming together is part of the daily or weekly or ongoing recharging system, if you will. There are times, however, when you need more, much more sometimes even, than what you're experiencing right here this morning. Knowing that, you can take deliberate steps to recharge before slipping into the doldrums. In other words, you can learn to see the doldrums coming, so to speak. And then you can avoid it altogether, perhaps. All right. Second step, refocus. Even if you're wearing the most expensive, best-made glasses on the planet, if it's the wrong prescription, you still can't see well. Just think about what I just said. You've got the best glasses in the world, but if it's the wrong prescription, everything's still blurry. So if you've ever said to yourself, now what was I doing as you walked into a room, okay, and I'm not just talking about old people, you know, like people over, 90 or 100, okay? But if you've ever done that, then you realize that you're not an idiot and you're not senile, you're just distracted. Your flow of thinking was interrupted by something. You maybe have a lot on your mind and going into a room to grab your keys or your wallet or whatever, it just kind of got kicked off the track there, so to speak. And now you're trying to find that again. That's what we're really talking about, is that thing, that flow of life being blurred and interrupted, and you have to regain or refocus your perspective. When Peter denied Christ, he felt horrible, as you can just imagine. And what did he want to do? He wanted to go back to what he knew best, and that was fishing. He's a fisherman by trade. And so he goes back fishing. And read that in John chapter 21. Peter just says, I'm going fishing. And it just said like that, I'm going fishing. Like, it's almost like, okay, everything just fell apart, and there's nothing else to do. I'm just going to go back to what I know best. And he goes fishing. And others say, well, yeah, we're going to go with you. And of course, that didn't go very well. The fishing was really bad. And then Jesus confronts him shortly after that in John chapter 21, verse 15 through 17, as you see on the screen. And he says in so many words, Peter, you had a mission given to you. Now it's time to quit fishing and get back to that mission that I entrusted to you. And of course, Peter's sitting there trying to deal with his emotions and his failure and his guilt and his shame for having disowned his Lord three times in a row, right after he said that he'd even die for the Lord. You can just imagine what might be going through Peter's mind at that time. But think what Jesus is saying here. It's time to get back. Time to refocus. You lost your perspective, okay? Everything's blurry right now, but you need to refocus. You see a similar situation when in Galatians 5, verse 7, you have Christians who are sidetracked with Judaism. Paul has taught them, they learned the gospel, they obeyed the gospel, they are walking right in the gospel, and then the Judaist teachers come in from Jerusalem or elsewhere, and they start confusing the Gentile Christians with all this talk about you need to have the law of Moses as well as follow Christ and so on. And Paul makes a comment there. He says, you were running well. Now you need to get refocused. You need to get your perspective back. You once were doing well, but now you're not. And so you need to find out where you left off. Revelation 2 verse 4, a more popular passage where Jesus says to the church at Ephesus, hey, you guys are doing great things, putting to test false apostles and doing great works and perseverance and et cetera and all these great things, except for you've lost your first love. You lost your perspective. Everything's blurry right now in the context of love for me. You need to get that back. So do something about that. I want to say that refocusing doesn't mean staring harder and harder at a problem you will never understand or know how to solve. Kind of like me staring at a calculus equation. I don't know anything about calculus. So me staring at a calculus equation for many hours at a time is not going to solve that problem any better than when I started. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're staring at a problem that you don't know how to solve, staring at it longer isn't going to solve it anymore. And that's just human nature. What you need to do is learn something or see it in a different light or a different angle or a different perspective altogether. I'll give you a real-life, somewhat humorous example of what I'm talking about. My son, I had gotten him a 72 Nova here years ago. It was his first car. I wanted it to be a classic car, and it was classic. It was a classic disaster. We had so much trouble with that car. On one particular occasion, the thing wouldn't start, and we're sitting there wondering. Roy comes over, and Roy and I are tearing the thing apart. Roy, I'm trying not to embarrass you, but it's going to happen. So Roy and I are tearing this thing apart. We're taking apart all the electrical stuff and testing this and bypassing this and, you know, going to starter and battery and, you know, all these other things. John, our other neighbor, John Kokowski, comes over, and he says, "You should check the starter solenoid." And what does Chad say? "Nah, it's not the starter solenoid. I know it's not, because we bypass this and that and the other thing, and it's just not that. So we spent about 3 hours going through that. John's still there, just in the background. I think he had a cup of coffee, like, "You should check the starter solenoid." And so we finally checked the starter solenoid. I took it off, 2 bolts. I took it over to the AutoZone or whatever. I had the solenoid checked, and they said, "Oh, it's defective." $17 later, I had the new solenoid in, and, you know, then the end of story. Sometimes our perspective is going in the wrong direction. And even when someone's telling us what the real problem is, we're not willing to listen to it because we're stuck in this direction. Do you see what I'm saying? We're staring at a problem, but we're not listening to the solution, even though we don't know what the solution might be ourselves, but someone is telling us. In this case, more seriously, God is telling us what the solution is. And we're stuck over here. We're not listening to what that solution is. We get so fixated on one thing that we're unable and really unwilling to see the real problem, even when it's spelled out for us. Christians do this sort of thing. We'll say things like, "Oh, it's just too complex. Oh, it's just too hard. And, you know, what God's telling me, I know what he's saying, but..." And then we always throw that "but" in there, right? What I affectionately call "but" theology. Because we're always saying, "Yeah, I know God said that, but... I know I'm supposed to do this, but... I know the God's word teaches that, but..." And then we always have our, you know, statement there, our fill-in. And yet nothing God asks us to do is too complex. He's done all the complex part himself. But it does require conscious and deliberate and determined effort. And this is not something that's going to be easy or casual. Likely, it will not be resolved in a few minutes, nor easily or effortlessly. At the same time, you have to be honest and courageous enough to do what needs to get done. Which brings us to part 3, redirection. And this implies action. This is where people get scared. Because so far we've talked about mostly concept, but now here is applied principles. Making an effort to get back into the current. The key here is not just any action, but the right action applied in the right way for the right reason. God determines, by the way, what right is in all of those cases, not you. In Acts chapter 1, verse 14, for example, you see Jesus' brothers there in the upper room. Well, if you go back to John chapter 7, where were Jesus' brothers? They were at home mocking him. "If you're the Christ, go to Jerusalem, do some miracles," right? Now they're in the upper room, and what are they doing? They're praying to Jesus. They're praying to God, right? They're doing what they should have done in the first place. Now things are different. Redirection. Why? Well, because they're applying what they've learned to their own situation, and that changes the course of what they do. When you're asking for God's help, you can't just sit back and get comfortable. You have to do something. Maybe it's something different than you've ever done before. If you're out in the ocean in a sailboat in the doldrums, well, then you need to get the oars out and get busy and paddle. You expect it to use the sail, getcha. You know, it's a sailboat after all, but if there's no wind, you got to do something. And we see that idleness is the cause of many problems, and so we want to avoid just being idle because that leads us, a sustained idleness does lead us to usually worse things, far worse than doldrums, as I said. Sometimes people say, "Well, I'm just stuck," but they don't want to move. They don't want to make any effort. Those in the Bible who had periods of despondency and doldrums did not just wait it out. And I use Elijah again. Here he is, holed up in a cave out there in the wilderness, and God put him to work. 1 Kings 19, verse 15 and 16, God says to Elijah, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram, and Jehu you shall anoint king over Israel, and Elisha you shall anoint as prophet in your place." Basically, God says, get out of this cave and get busy doing something. I have work for you to do, and you know what it is now. So you need to do it. In the case of our scripture reading this morning, Matthew 14, we have Jesus who just heard about John the Baptist losing his life, being beheaded by King Herod. And he is rather depressed by that, as you see in the passages there. But then the multitudes follow him. And it says in Matthew 14:14 that he felt compassion for them. And he spent the rest of the day healing the sick. And then they're all hungry and they're out in a desolate place. And so he ends up feeding them. And there's 5,000 men, not counting women and children. So you see that Jesus did something. In other words, redirection from dwelling or even obsessing on the death of John the Baptist and of the pain that that caused him, and started redirecting his mind to, this is what needs to get done. I'm going to apply myself right here. And that's what he did. And by the way, he had to have eaten too, I'm sure, of the same food. Paul in 2 Corinthians 7, verse 6, I talked about 2 Corinthians last week. It's just really the whole epistle is about Paul going through a really difficult time. And he says that God who comforts the depressed, or that word can be humble, comforted us by the coming of Titus. Titus brought good news about the Corinthians to Paul and just was a great sense of relief and refreshing to him. So now Paul gets back to work. He's back in the current. He's refueled. His vision is clarified. He has work to do and he's doing it. And that can be the same with you. So listen to what God's telling you. He may have work for you to do that you don't know about, that you weren't paying attention to, or maybe you just were so caught up in, and I'm speaking of myself in this way that I've done, in your self-pity, in your, you know, self-absorbed situation, that you didn't pay attention that there's actually things that you can be doing. I do want to warn you that if battery cells are bad, recharging them isn't going to help. You need to replace them. And if the direction that we're taking is taking us farther and farther away from God, then recharging to stay on that path is the wrong answer. You need a new path. That's really what I'm saying here. You need a new path. And don't be afraid to take a new path. All right, so the second half, or the second last part of our lesson here, is how to reach the current. So far I've just told you what to do, but not how. Remember, there is no single or universal answer. This may require different things, trying out different things. You do need some things in this process. You need to be to have a plan of some sort. It can be a very simple plan, or maybe two plans or three, in case the one doesn't work. Okay, you need to have an open mind. In other words, you're not going, "Well, this probably won't work, but I'll try it anyway." That's always a great mindset, right? A great attitude. You just have to have an open mind. You can't hope for a Band-Aid approach or an easy solution or expect the first thing you do is going to work charms and everything's going to be, you know, rosy and there'll be sunshine and butterflies and puppies and miniature goats or whatever, you know. I'm just saying. So whatever it is that you're looking for in that Pollyannish, you know, pie in the sky type view, it's probably not going to happen right away. You do need a plan, because a great amount of energy exerted in the wrong direction doesn't help you. If you put your ladder on the wrong wall, someone has said, and you climb up that ladder, you're still on the wrong wall. All that energy you used to climb up the ladder was for nothing, because you're in the wrong place to begin with. So you do want to have a plan, but you want to have the right plan. And this is where the counsel, by the way, of wise and experienced Christians can come in to help you develop that plan. People who have been there, gone through the fire, gone through the doldrums, you know, gone through your same experience. This is why you should listen to those people. Some suggestions. First of all, do something different. Add a new flavor or dimension or element to the dead calm of your present life. I know some of this sounds trite. I'll say it anyway. Just try something new, something different. Try a new route to work. try a new food. I just discovered fish tacos here recently. Honey and I went to a Taco Time. Who knew? They're pretty good, okay? And I just really hadn't done that before. Try a new movie. Try a new book. Read a different book. If you're always reading the same kind of book, maybe you should try something different. Get your mind going in a different direction. Listen to different music, not rap or anything like that. I'm just saying. How many people did I just offend? But my point here is listen to something that can change your perspective. Go to a different store, not just to buy something, but just to look around. Go to a different restaurant. Rearrange the furniture if you have to. Rearrange the pictures on the wall if you must. It doesn't have to be something radical. It just has to be something different to change the pace, to change the scenery, to change your mind. That's really what this is all about. It's changing your mind, stimulating your thinking. And while you're doing something new, pay attention to details. Look for positive things, not negative things. Experiment and enjoy. In other words, if you go to a new restaurant, don't go, oh, the waiter's here, oh, terrible, oh, the food's here, oh, the lighting, it's awful, you know. Look for the things that you like, hey, this tastes really good. You know, and enjoy the experience and look for that pie. Have a good attitude going into it as best as possible. The purpose of this is to recharge your joy of life and to get out of your physical and ritual routine and to leave, in some cases, the old, comfortable, well-worn life behind for a while. And you might find that for a while becomes permanent because you didn't really need some of that stuff after all. Maybe you never needed it. It's okay to leave old stages behind. I am speaking of myself here. It's okay to leave baggage behind. You can't be afraid to do so, especially if it's weighing you down. Remember last week I talked about being on an inner tube in the river and getting caught in the whirlpool? All right, imagine you're in that situation, and not only are you the one in the inner tube, but you're carrying like a giant bale of hay on top of you as well, okay? It's going to be a lot harder to get out of that whirlpool with all that weight sitting on top of you. And this is what happens with people is they have all this weight of their stuff on top of them. And their stuff isn't just material stuff like what your garage might be filled with. It's stuff like how I want to live or how I want to be or how I want my personality to be or how I want things done for me by other people. And in the end, none of that really matters. And you just haven't recognized that yet. So what you need to do is start recognizing that there's a lot of things in your life, including your own behavior or your own things that you choose to do that really aren't that important at all. And they can be better. They can be changed. Maybe some of them need to disappear altogether. Sometimes people spend more time and energy trying to protect and preserve their way of life than they do drawing near to God. And then they wonder why they can't draw near to God. It's because they're dragging this huge life behind them that they're trying to protect. And if you would just let go of that, that's what Paul means when he says, forgetting what lies behind, I press forward. You have to let go of this in order to do that. When the ancient sailors were in the doldrums, they might jettison some of the cargo to make the ship lighter so that it would be easiest for even the slightest breeze to move them. I want you to think about the principle there. So if you're dependent on wind for travel and you're stuck in a place where there's very, very little wind, then you want to be as light as possible in order to move so that even the slightest breeze can help you. But if you're weighed down with stuff, it's going to take a pretty hefty wind to get you out of that. And if there is no such wind, then, well, you're not going to get out of that. Purging and cleaning and changing things up might be in order here. And when I say might be, I believe this is my opinion. It probably always is. It's just that not everyone wants to do it. Sadly, we have to sometimes be pressed to a point of desperation in order to see that and then do something about that. Here's another point. Spend some serious and productive time with God alone. What we're doing here is good. It really is. God's telling us to come together to do what we're doing. But that does not replace what needs to be done with you and God alone. This is not a replacement for that. So take a drive and think about God and your relationship with Him and where it's at and where it needs to be, perhaps. Or go for a walk. You don't have to go very far. Just you, your Bible, and a snack if you have to, okay? And engage in some meditation. And don't do this while you're listening to talk shows or music on the radio. This is what people do. They put their earbuds on or their favorite stuff on, and then they think, oh, I'm going to meditate to God. No, you're not. In fact, that's insulting to God to think that He has to listen to your thoughts through your music in order for you to pay attention to Him. Turn everything off. Give Him His due credit, His due reverence that He rightly deserves. This is not talking about just a getaway. This is a purpose-driven expedition, if you will. Okay? You're not just looking for, I need some downtime. We need some me time. Okay? That's very selfish in itself. You're talking about, I need some time with my God. And concentrate and say things like, I'm stuck, but there is a way out, and God will lead me out. I know that He will. I trust Him to do that. There's this kind of ongoing prayer, ongoing communication that you're having with God, this ongoing communion that you're having with God. This is not a time for self-pity, I want to stress again, but the beginning of a search for new or lost objectives. New objectives that you didn't have before, or lost objectives that you should have kept, like when Jesus told the Ephesians, you lost your first love. That's an objective that you lost that needs to be brought back. And it's time to take inventory. Where am I in my life? What exactly is distracting me? What am I missing? And it's time to listen to God for answers rather than you telling God everything. Well, God, this is what I think is happening. So it's this and that and the other thing. And you're sitting here explaining everything to God as if He didn't know. Because remember, He is God after all. And so instead of you talking, listen to what He is saying. His perspective is superior to yours and better than yours in every respect. Give Him that credit. Open your heart to God and say things like, I trust You, God, to open my eyes and open my vision and clear this blurriness away from me so I can see clearly what it is You want me to do. And remember what Jesus said in that process. So Matthew 7, 7 and 8, ask, seek, knock. You're petitioning God for help. You're knocking at the door, right? And you're looking for answers and trust that God is going to give you the answers that you need. Not all the answers that you want, but He'll give you the answers that you need. And that's what you want. And when you reach your destination, I might recommend that you read one of the following passages here. Maybe Acts chapter 9 in Saul's conversion there, especially down at the latter part where after Saul has been blinded on the road to Damascus and Jesus approaches him there in that event and lays it all out for what is going to happen. And then Paul is confronted by Ananias later on, and Ananias didn't have anything to do with Paul, and Jesus says to him, Paul is a chosen instrument of mine. I want you to realize that you are a chosen instrument of God's. You may not think yourself to be, because you're not, what people think, you got to be a preacher or, some big name in the church in order to be a chosen instrument. Actually, no, you don't. And some of the preachers who think they're chosen instruments don't actually act like chosen instruments. So it's not about that. It's not about a position. It's about who you are to God. You are a chosen instrument, but you need to see yourself that way, as a chosen instrument of God. Think about what Paul or Saul here at this point went through in that conversion. He thought he was going in the right direction, and God stops that dramatically, abruptly, and says, nope, this is the wrong way. You need to go this direction instead. And he had to give up everything that he had in going in that direction in order to change the course. And you might have to as well. Think about Esther. In her decision, Esther chapter 4, verse 14, Mordecai, her uncle, comes to her. Esther's in a bad spot. She knows what's going to happen to her people, the Jews, and then she can appeal to King Ahasuerus, her husband, but he has not welcomed her into the court. And in Persian customs, you know, you had to have the king welcome you into the court before you could enter. And so she's in a very bad spot. And Mordecai says to her, and who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. I think some of the best words in Scripture right there. Who knows whether God hasn't brought you to this time and place in your life for you to do something for him that he's been preparing you for all along, and you're just blinded to it as it stands because you're caught in your doldrums. Think about your own circumstances. Who knows whether or not you have attained your circumstances that God has allowed you to be in for such a time as this. Or you could think about Joseph in Genesis 37, then 39 through 41, all chapters there. And here he spent a lot of time in prison. I imagine that Joseph went through some doldrums there in prison. 13 years he spent in prison, languishing in an Egyptian prison for crimes he didn't commit. And then great things awaited him, and we all know that. I mean, he was elevated to the second in command of all of Egypt, and Egypt was one of the most powerful nations in the world at that time. And he's taken out of prison, out of the very depths of prison, and elevated to the second in command over all of Egypt. Doesn't that sound familiar? Like Jesus coming out of the grave, out of crucifixion, and then elevated to sitting at the right hand of God. My whole point with that is that great things might be awaiting you, and you might just not know it yet. I'm not saying you're going to get elevated to vice president or anything like that, okay? But I am saying that great things can be yours if you let God bring them to you. Pray more. Draw near to God through prayer. Luke chapter 5:16, it says of Jesus that he would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. What was Jesus doing there? Well, he wasn't doing a bunch of Hail Marys or Lord's Prayers there. What was he doing? He was recharging, refocusing, and then redirecting through God himself. So the purpose here is to refocus. We have work to do. God gives us the ability to do it, expects us to do it, and rewards us for doing it. And then finally, just in the general sense, do something. Stay busy. Get busy. Force yourself to do small projects. This helps me. I told you last week that every Monday, and it's going to happen, tomorrow's Monday, and I know that I'm going to be facing a doldrum-like mental depression. And what helps to get me out of that, honestly, is just to do something. It might be housework. It might be yard work. It might be some project and, you know, that I'm working on, a writing project or something like that. It's just kind of a no-brainer thing that, you know, isn't so complex. I mean, it's just staying busy, doing stuff. Here's what is the worst thing for me. And by the way, I've done this for many times. It's to sit on the couch and feel sorry for myself. That doesn't do anything for me. So I need to get busy. I need to do stuff. And do something for someone else. Help someone else. Call someone else. Visit them. Write them a letter. Send flowers if you need to. Find a need and fulfill it. For some people, it might be teaching a child how to do something. That forces you always to have a fresh look on the world. Because children are just sponges, and they see things differently, and they see things incredibly differently than you and I do. And you can learn a lot from children. Fix a meal, share a meal, read scripture to someone, maybe who can't read on their own. Do volunteer work. There's plenty of it out there. Schools, soup kitchens, blood drives, whatever it is. Get yourself involved if that's what it takes. The purpose here is to redirect yourself away from yourself and your depression and to redirect your attention to other people to stimulate yourself. Prolonged brooding over your own troubles and frustrations only helps you to sink further and further into those frustrations, and that's where resentment and despondency and even cynicism will result. Remember, this is not a universal one-size-fits-all thing. It's just suggestions. Any variation on anything I just said achieves the same end will work for you. You get out of the doldrums, back into the current. A common complaint people say is, well, I just don't have time for all that stuff. Yeah, actually, usually we're not out of time. We just mismanage our time. We spend our time doing bad things or poor things or wasting our time doing things that don't need to be done at all. All this that I talked about does require time. You may not need much to get restarted, however, and back into the flow. It may not be as much time as you think. Recharge, refocus, redirect. Don't be afraid to modify anything I just said or change it altogether, but the core of it is solid. Change your routine, change your habits may be in your best interest. Take advantage of the doldrums. I know that sounds weird to say that. Remember what I started out with saying, that just because you're in the doldrums doesn't mean you're useless to God. So take advantage of what you're going through in order to use that as an opportunity to grow stronger and walk closer with the Lord. Trust deeper in the Lord. The doldrums, as they stand, are temporary and not permanent. The Lord will be our pilot. He's the one that will get us out of dead calm and back into the current if we trust him to do so. Lots said there, I know that, but I hope it was helpful. And again, this whole lesson was just to stimulate your thinking, not to become your thinking or to replace your thinking, but to stimulate your thinking about who you are, where you're going, and where you want to be. If there's anyone that needs to respond to our lesson this morning, this would be the time you could do so if you choose, coming forward during the singing of our song, as we do stand to sing the song that Roy has selected for us here.